Capitan America che dà la palla, si chiude il triangolo fra lui e Giroud, ed è Christian Pulisic che segna un meraviglioso 2-0 USA.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up guys, glad to be back. New side, new layout. I'm on the left now.
You've always been on the left.
Matt is on the political right.
He's the right winger here.
Maddie's Pulisic, technically.
Yeah, I'm Leao. That makes perfect sense.
Oliver's Giroud. Makes sense. Yeah, I'm happy to be equals with you guys on the top row. So this is a real A team right here, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if any of the B team guys come in, we'll use the old lineup or layout.
And I'll be back down there.
People might be shocked to realize that, you know, we've obviously got a StreamYard Premium, which is what we use to record. And it seems like every week we fiddle around with it a bit before we record and find out something new. So maybe we should, you know, just look into it generally before we start recording. But here we go. We've got a new layout. It's looking good. This week's episode is powered by caffeine and electrolytes for me. Apologies if I'm a bit rusty. I had about 5 hours sleep last night after a weekend in Poland. But couldn't miss this one. It's the big one. It's the Derby preview. But before we dive into this week's episode, a thank you to our founding members on Substack, Des Windsor McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito Mack, Moritz Paulman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, and MJ. We've got some questions from our Substack subscribers, so we will be going through them in a bonus episode either this week or next week. Some good ones in there, so stay tuned for that. And as always, you can go over to our Substack and try a free 7-day trial if you haven't had a look at it already. So, yeah, you can give it a week, see if you like it or not. And thank you to everybody who has subscribed so far. This is it then, boys. The first derby of the season. 2023 has not been kind to us when it comes to fixtures against Inter. It would be fair to say we've lost all 4 games and we haven't conceded a goal. We haven't scored a goal. They haven't conceded a goal. What is it?
Conceded a lot of goals.
6. I'm trying to work out how many we've conceded. There was a 3.
We don't have to.
Yeah, it's a lot anyway. So it's a new season though now, and hopefully that means it's a clean slate.
Hopefully that means we don't play them 5 times again.
Yeah, preferably, because you know when they're overplayed, they lose a bit of their meaning, right? The derbies. Ultimately, though, the headline going into this one is that both teams have had a perfect start to the season. 3 wins from 3, so obviously 6 from 6 combined. The two teams that are outright top of the table.
9 from 9.
Ah, man, I'm fucking tired. I'm very, very tired. No, I meant 6 wins from 6 collectively. But
Okay, there you go.
They haven't conceded a goal yet this season, having won 2-0, 2-0, 4-0. We have obviously won 2-0 against Bologna, 4-1 against Torino, and most recently 2-1 at the Olimpico against Roma. I think we've probably had the slightly harder 3 games to start the season, and we've done well to emerge victorious in all 3 of those games. Inter had a couple of home games, wearing a weird like back-to-back away games against Roma and Inter. And yeah, we arrive at the derby in hopefully... in the mood to change what has been a difficult 2023 for games against them. The international break has also not been kind to us, though, because we have injuries to talk about, which is probably going to be the main point of this entire preview. What I want to start with is a question that has aroused some debate on social media. Olivier Giroud, at the age of 36, started for France against Ireland last Thursday night, and he lasted 23 minutes before coming off with an ankle injury. Now, I'm seeing 2 sides to this argument. I'm seeing people say Giroud shouldn't be starting games for France at that age. And probably more my line of thinking, which is it's actually maybe a good sign that Giroud's still starting games for France at that age. And also, you know, I'd rather him play that game than the one that's closer to the derby anyway. Where do you boys stand on it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought he was faking the injury, to be honest with you. So I'm thrilled he's been back in Milan already. He's been training. He's cleared for the derby already. So,
he's not cleared. Oh, it's still up in the air. But
well, I think he'll be cleared.
Yeah.
AJ's sources say he's been cleared.
Yeah, my sources are my ass. I just pulled them out of there. So let's just make that clear. I haven't been told anything. I don't know. It seemed almost too perfectly. Like, at his age, he's an experienced guy. He knows how the game works. And I really feel like he probably just, he said, look, this game's too important. Let's get out of France for these meaningless games because they're Euro qualifiers, but it's France. You know, they got Mbappe. They're not going to not qualify. They'll be good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he went down. I'm really annoyed that Teo and Mike and who's our other French player? Someone else was there.
Kalulu?
Yeah, no. Kalulu too. Kalulu did get hurt also, so that's annoying.
Yeah, but in training at Milanello, because he wasn't called up and he's no longer eligible to play for the under-21. So it just goes to show that these injuries can happen even without international football.
Yeah, but it seems like they only happen during the international break for us, so. I have to do the math, but I think we are getting close to over 200 days now since we had a fully fit squad.
Yeah. When was Bennacer injured?
He
was the last one, right?
We've always had a long-term absentee. That's the point. Like early on last season, we had Calabria and Florenzi go down with like pretty long-term
and Kier.
And then, yeah, Kier's not been able to stay fit. And then when Bennacer got injured in the first leg of the Champions League derby, that basically ensured that we're going to have another like 8 months of having someone out because of how bad his knee problem was. Kalulu, as you mentioned, picked up a muscle problem in training. He's sort of day to day. He's not been fully ruled out, but I think that this has created a real headache because Tomori is suspended for the game, as we knew anyway. He got 2 yellow cards in the Roma match and therefore, we'll serve a 1-game suspension. And it seemed pretty obvious to put Kalulu in alongside Chiao. But now with Kalulu probably missing most of the training sessions in the lead up to the game, it's going to be difficult to see him start from the first minute. So then you pick him between Simon Kjær and Marco Pellegrino. Now, Kjær started one of Denmark's games, but it was a game against San Marino, who are well known as being the worst national team in the world. They won 4-0, but a friend of mine who went to the game, a Denmark fan, said that he just had nothing to do all game because it's San Marino, you know? So that's hardly the tough examination that you would want him to have if he's trying to get back to 100% match rhythm. And then he came off the bench in the second half for them last night. So basically, bottom line is he's not in top condition either. Pellegrino came over, obviously, not near the deadline or anything. He will have had quite a few training sessions with the squad, but the cohesion is not there in the same way that it would be with Kalulu or a fully fit Kjær.
I did the math on when we were last injury free, 855 days.
That is
we had a fully fit squad. Yeah.
How long?
855 days.
Coming up to like 2.5 years then.
Yeah.
No, coming up to 3 years. That's mental. Absolutely. And Inter by comparison have Alexis Sanchez and Juan Cuadrado, who are doubts for the game. They could still make it, but it does feel like they get a lot more rubber the green, you know, when it comes to keep.
Yeah, I mean, neither of them were going to start. They might come on late, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like, whatever.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. It's depth and it's still good options to have and stuff. But you look at even, for example, Lautaro Martinez, who is probably at the moment their most important player. He is the top scorer in the league. He's got 5 goals in the first 3 rounds of action. He's scored in 8 derbies, I think it is now. So he's become a real thorn in our side. He's flying off to South America to obviously represent Argentina. And he was supposed to be the last player back out of anybody across both teams. And now they're saying that he might not even play in their game tomorrow now and just be entirely rested. And that would have been a game in Bolivia, which is 3,500 meters above sea level. So he would have been playing 60, 70 minutes, maybe a full 90 at high altitude, would have then had to fly back, had 1 training session and then played in the derby. As it turns out, he might now be coming back pretty well rested. And then I don't know what the situation is with Pulisic, if he's likely to start against
Ormond or not. Yeah, that I'm not sure, but I did see he was supposed to be back on the 13th. In fact, the majority of our players are starters should be back on the 13th.
He's meant to have 1 training session as well, same as everyone who's gone out to South America over that side of the world anyway. And that's just the way it is. It's the nature of the beast with international football, I suppose. Whether it impacts the game in the sense that the players that have been away, and there were 32 combined internationals across the two teams. Whether it impacts the game in the sense that everyone looks a bit sluggish and a bit leggy, I don't know. Generally, the derby, you know, all that kind of stuff goes out the window and the players feed off the adrenaline and the atmosphere of the occasion. Looking more specifically into them, what about them has scared you this season, and what about them do you think we can take advantage of? They've got to be beatable, right?
Yeah. I mean, I thought they were going to crash out of the top four this season. There's still plenty of time for that to happen. You know, we got 35 games left to play here, so it's not the end of the world this early in the season, but they're definitely showing themselves to be formidable. I think this is the first time the Derby's been played where we're first and second since, like, 1967, something ridiculous like that.
Which doesn't make sense, because when we won the league, they finished second and vice versa.
But when we played each other, they had a rough start.
Sorry?
When we played each other, they started their season pretty poorly, so they were in, like, 6th or 7th at first or something like that, I think.
Also, I think the stat refers to being joint 1st and 2nd, like,
level. Oh, equal.
Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, that makes more sense.
That doesn't make sense, because the last two seasons, like, you know.
Yeah. I think, like the Conte season when they won the league under Conte, it was 1st, 2nd. That was when they sort of definitively overtook us. We'd lost to Spezia, and then they beat us in the derby to take top spot. And then I can't remember in our Scudetto season. I think when we beat them the second time, we were 3rd, and it was Napoli Inter who were the top two.
So maybe they're just referring to, like, joint 1st.
Yes, I think that's okay. What it is. Yeah.
But as far as what worries me, obviously Lautaro, he can't stop scoring.
Right.
I would really like to see Thuram not have a good game, and he seems to be finding form. He did. He ironically scored coming off the bench for France when Giroud came off. So there was that. I do think Sommer's probably the best goalkeeper they've had since Handanovic in his prime, you know, a couple seasons ago.
I think he's better than Onana.
Yeah, Onana's trash, dude. I don't know how they sold him for as much as he did. He just has such bad thoughts. Like, his mental capacity is just not there. I don't know what it is. He makes so many silly mistakes, but it is what it is, I guess. I do think we could get past him. I think Liao might have an easier time now that Pulisic's there. He's not going to be double covered. He might be able to take Dumfries one-on-one. I don't think that should be too difficult for him. And I think Pulisic or Chukwueze, whoever's on the right, can do a decent job as well. It's something that Inter haven't seen from us in a long time. The majority of this Inter team really has been there for a while. They know their core and they know us. So, or they know what we used to be. So they don't know this new team very well, and I think it might actually give them some problems. I don't know if we're going to win, but I don't know. I think it'll be a competitive game. I'm actually going with a draw.
Yeah. I think that we're their first big test.
Mm-hmm.
They really haven't played anyone who can put up goals, right? And somehow they are continuing to score. I don't know how. They lost Lukaku and Zeko. I think that this is our most, like, dynamic front three that we've had in the past 3 years. And that has hurt us in the past, because all they had to do was shut down Liao. And in a derby, like, if you have, like, you need to be, like, on your A game. And it's hard to be on your A game when you're being shut down every time. So, like AJ said, Liao will have more space. I'm excited to see what Pulisic does. Hopefully he plays, right?
Yeah, we don't even know who's going to start.
Yeah, I'm assuming he would, just because Chukwueze has not looked, like, phenomenal. Like, he's looked good, but, like, people were way more hyped about him than Pulisic. But, yeah, I'm going for a draw as well.
Chukwueze got back today, right? He got back this morning in Milano.
Or he's due back today. I think it's either tonight or tomorrow. But he paid his friendly last night and got a goal and an assist, which is good. But against a team that, as you dug out the numbers for, are really not very good. So kind of like Kier and the San Marino, it's good for confidence, but it's sort of flat track bullying, really. I think Chukwueze's moment will come, won't it? You know, I think
I feel like you just don't change up the lineup.
Yeah,
now, you know, for an important game like this. Like, it'd be different if Pulisic got back like the day before the game and Chukwueze had been there the whole time. You know, that'd be different. He'd have more time, but realistically, he still hasn't had that much time to adapt to the system. And I don't know. I wouldn't give him that much faith this early on.
Just looking at into the team that they played against Fiorentina and the team that they're probably expected to stick with, at least if you believe the reports that kind of circulate a few days out from the game itself. Obviously, Sommer in goal. It's the back three that I'm looking at and thinking it's about time we got the better of this. Damian, Stefan de Vrij, and Bastoni. Bastoni, as we know now, is one of the best centre-backs in the league. I don't like him, but I can't bring myself to, you know, try and say that he's not a good player because he's very good. He often shepherds that back line. De Vrij, as we know, has a lot of experience in this league, and he knows the derby as well. And then Damian, who has done a good job, actually, in keeping us quiet. It's all right saying that in previous derbies that have happened this year, it's as simple as just stop Liao. But Damian v Liao should have been a mismatch all this time, and yet it just hasn't been for whatever reason. So I think Damian deserves a bit of credit for the way that he's been able to stifle our threats in those past four games. This time it's different for the reason that Maddie said. We've got a front three rather than a front one. A lot will depend on who that striker is as well. If it's Noah Okafor, there's part of me that is actually a little bit excited about the prospect of a fluid front three that they're not able to track as easily because, you know, Giroud is pretty static. That being said, Giroud's turn on De Vrij will live long in our memories. The midfield then, Calhanoglu's still playing that deeper lying role, something that I never thought I'd see the day that was sustainable, but here we are. Barella and Mkhitaryan either side, and then you've got Dumfries as the right wing back and DiMarco as the left wing back. We need to stop DiMarco just in general because he's pissing me off now. I don't like him either. I don't like any of their players, but in particular him. I think he's a rat. We have struggled to keep him quiet in previous derbies. That probably owing to Calabria being prone to lapses in concentration and not looking at the runner over his shoulder. DiMarco scored the opener in the Supercoppa, for example, in that first half of the first leg in the Champions League semi-finals. He caused us all kind of problems down the left side when they were just pinging cross-field balls. So we need to keep an eye on him, and the midfield needs to work hard. And I think it's in the midfield that this game's going to be won and lost, because in the four defeats that we've had this year, we've been totally outmatched physically down the middle. Like, we couldn't lay a glove on them. This time, I think we're a bigger, more physical midfield. We cover more ground. I think we're more efficient in possession as well, so we should be able to hang on to the ball a little better and withstand those moments of pressure that they're inevitably going to have. And then it'll be Lautaro and Thuram up against Tomori's replacement and Malik Thiaw. And who should it be?
Well, it sounds like it's going to be Kjær because Kalulu's hurt. We don't know if he's going to be fit. And I mean, that's going to have to change the whole dynamic of how we play. If we throw Kjær in there and we play the way we've been playing, he's going to get beat every single time. He's not fast enough to play that recovery ball and hold the high line and chase back the attackers when they get behind us, because they're going to inevitably, eventually someone's going to get behind us. And, you know, Lautaro's a guy who could do that pretty easily. So I don't know. It's interesting with Kjær. Some days he just has, you know, the world's greatest purple patch you could think of. And then other days it's like, yeah, this is a 40-year-old Danish man recovering from injury. Like, it's just, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. And it's either really good or really bad. And I don't want to see him at all, let alone as a backup. But unfortunately, we're in a position where our starter's suspended and our second string is likely out injured. So it's going to be him. And we'll see how.
Yeah, that's one of the spots we didn't really reinforce this summer very well.
And I think it was the spot we all said we wanted another player in on that bonus episode. So at least we knew what we were talking about. I think our midfield is going to be a lot stronger. You know, Loftus-Cheek is one of two players who didn't get called up from our starting 11. So he's been there. He's been training for it. And that's something that they haven't seen from us since Frank Kessie. And you could argue, you know, Loftus-Cheek might actually even be stronger. He's taller. He's more physical, that's for sure. Look, you put him up against a guy like Barella, you know, he's no good. Pascal Gross with the victim complex, that's all he is. I don't know why people think he's the greatest Italian ever. He, guy's dog shit, but, you know, he's going to get flung around. You know, you might see a couple triple somersaults and a few whistles because of it, but he's not doing anything to us. So I think we get around him. Çalhanoğlu doesn't know him for once. He doesn't have this, like, burning desire to slide through the back of his ankles like he does every other player on our team right now. So hopefully, you know, he starts using his head, but we all know he doesn't have one of those. And who's the other? Mkhitaryan? I mean, he's whatever. He's average. I don't care. I think he's past his prime. DeMarco's something to worry about. And Dumfries, he's a punk. But him and Teo, one of them wins it, one of them loses it every time. You never know who it's going to be. It's a toss-up. So
loses it physically or mentally?
No, just like the battle in general. Well, but yeah, honestly, mentally as well.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love it when them two go at each other. There's no Tonali here to protect Teo this time, so someone's going to have to step in and do that. I think Reinders with his pearly white Turkish grin might not be as intimidating as Tonali. Then again, Tonali looks like the fifth Beatle, so, you know, maybe...
No, but, I mean, Loftus-Cheek...
Yeah, he can stride over and sort it out, yeah.
And Reinders is really fucking good. I didn't even mention
he
him.
He is.
But, yeah, he could do a good job. I mean, that's the one plus we have going into this game is Inter does not know how this new team plays. Like, obviously, they got three games of film to watch,
but they even don't know how this team plays. Even those three games, things have changed so much. Like, you know, you'd look at the first game and think, okay, so Teo's the inverted fullback. And then you'd watch the Roma game and you'd look up and it's like, oh, fucking Calabria's in midfield. Like, what's going on? So we're changing up the instructions every game. The one thing I will say is I don't know if we get away with those same levels of fluidity in a game like this, especially when Inter will, as we know with Inzaghi side, they'll sit compact behind the ball and they'll try batter us at the other end with counterattacks. It happens every time and they happen to be very, very good at counterattacking football. It got them to a Champions League final and that's fair enough. But I just think that if we're, you know, dragging players all over the pitch and we lose the ball, then they're the team that are going to exploit it. So I think we do need to be a bit more careful in that regard. But dare I say the pressure's more on them. Mm-hmm. You know, the bookies have them as the Scudetto favourites. We've both started the season by winning all three of our games, but this is their home fixture. If we were to draw, I think we could walk away with that and say, yeah, we remain unbeaten. That's the toughest... That's a tough part of the season out of the way, those first four games. Then we've got a home Champions League game to follow, and hopefully we can ride the crest of the wave there. But then we've got Hellas Verona at home after that. So, you know, I think we just need to get through this one, as bad as it sounds, because we go into every derby wanting to win it, because it would be massive for early season momentum. But I just don't think a draw is the worst result in the world.
I think it depends on how we draw.
Like, yeah, potentially.
I think we have to look competitive, right? Like, you know, we could draw and they could just, their finishing could be horrible and we could just be a punching bag, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like if they take an early lead and we fight back to tie it up and finish at a draw, like I think that's good. Mm. But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it's something like Roma last season, we're up 2-0 and then bottle it in the 87th minute, like then, yeah, that feels like an L, you know? Mm. But yeah, look, I'm happy with the draw. 1 point is plenty. You know, it keeps us undefeated. It keeps us tied at the top, obviously. And it takes a little bit of an edge out of Inter. You know, they finally, if we could even score, what would be the first goal they've conceded this season? We don't know how they're going to react. You know,
that's like, a good point.
That's true. Yeah,
that is a really good point. So,
especially if we score early.
Yeah.
But one thing about Inter with us is, you know, you say they sit back in the counter, and that's very true. But with us in the last four games that we played against them, they've attacked from minute one. They've gone straight at us, and I think that's flustered us every time. Why haven't we figured that out? You know, it happened four consecutive games. Like, we should know better. So
that the biggest game was obviously the first leg of the semi-final. And I think that we were so naive in that first 30 minutes that we need to see something in this game. Like, Inzaghi has, unfortunately, outthought Pioli in the last four games. He just has. And that shouldn't happen. Not just because Pioli's a more experienced coach and he's won the Scudetto, whereas Simone Inzaghi hasn't. And... you know, Simone Inzaghi is seen as more of a cup manager than a league manager, whatever. Like, you can't get out four times in a row by the same coach with a squad. In my opinion, Inter's squad was a little bit better last season, and probably the final league table showed that. But in those games, what we saw on the field made it look like it was a complete gulf between the two teams. And Maldini, for all the weird shit he said towards the end of his time with us, I think he actually nailed it after the second leg derby when he said it's not even been a contest, the last four games that we played against them. I think he took a pretty direct shot at Pioli saying, you need to figure out a way to play against these guys because we can't keep losing derbies. Mm-hmm. And it did get a bit embarrassing, to be honest, because we couldn't even score.
Well, we're trying a new position, or a formation, I mean, so.
Hopefully that brings stability in the midfield. I still worry about us in transition. We've not been tested by a team nearly as good as them yet. They're flying. We're flying, but we're a little bit more uncertain going into this one because of the little injury problems that we've picked up and stuff like that. That's why I'm thinking, yeah, let's just get a draw and get the fuck out of there. There's a good stat, actually, as well, that we, both Milan and Inter, have scored 8 goals so far this season. We've scored our 8 goals from 35 shots, and they've had 60. So we are a lot more clinical. Admittedly, 3 of those goals have been penalties for us, so it should be one shot, one goal in that scenario. But obviously, you've got to earn them, and it perhaps shows that Inter, despite scoring 8 goals, have been kind of wasteful.
The thing that worries me, though, is that also means we're getting twice as many chances as we are, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, Monza... So they play Monza, who are never going to be a team that sits back, not under their head coach, Paladino, who has, you know, a pretty expansive philosophy. Their second game was Cagliari, who've just been promoted, and they're a lot of people's pick to go straight back down. And the third team's Fiorentina, and Italiano either bends over for them or like gives them a really good game, and it was the bending over this time.
And they started the season fairly hot, so I think they came out attacking. I didn't watch that game, but that's just my assumption. You know, they thought, oh, we're in good form.
That Monza game, the first game of the season, I did watch all of that, and Monza had big chances to equalize early on in that second half, and they should have done. They kept missing chance after chance. I'd have to look up the numbers to see what Inter's big chances conceded is compared to ours. But it wouldn't surprise me if they're allowing more than us. Like that game in particular against Monza, they didn't look entirely in control. But then when they got the second goal, it killed it off. And it was totally against the run of play. So we can't get sucked into the trap like that either. When we get chances, we've got to bury them because we've done a good job of fucking missing them in the last four games. Right, yeah, final prediction. For all I've just said about how I would take a draw, I think we're going to lose again. I'd hate to see it, but I just think they're a bit better than us at the moment, and they're going to exploit our last minute decision to play whoever we play at centre back, and Giroud might not start. 3-1.
Jesus. Well, I'm far more optimistic than that, but I don't think we're going to win. I think it's going to be 3-3, and I think it's going to be settled late, and I don't know which side is going to concede the last goal, but whoever does is going to feel like they lost, and that's going to change the trajectory of the rest of the season.
A loss, a draw, a win, 2-0.
I like it. I'm rooting for Maddie.
Maddie's right. I hope Maddie's right. Honestly,
that means one of us will be right, no matter what. So can never say we're wrong.
Two goals from Captain America, too. AJ's bet is looking better and better each week.
If it's if it's my prediction who's right, then we might just not do a podcast next week because I'm getting sick of recapping derby defeats, to be honest. On a serious note, though, it is good that the eyes of the world will be on this fixture again. Mm-hmm. Like, I know we seem to say it every single time we've played them recently, but for so many years in the mid-2010s, it was just fucking battling for sixth place. You know, it was like 6th v 7th, and it was Joel Obi scoring for them and Freddie Guarín. And for us, it was, you know, hoping for a bit of genius from Mbaye Niang or Menez or whoever. Menez Ballers, obviously. But yeah, it was just a nothing fixture. It had fallen so far from what it was in the 90s, in the 2000s. But now with both teams being on that upward trajectory at the same time, I do think it's making a better product and it helps sell the league. So it is important that it continues like this. As much as I'd love us to be totally dominant over them, I do think it being a battle at the top end of the table between the two biggest teams in Italian football, because Juve, you know, are a skeleton at this point. Long may it continue. And I hope I'm wrong with my prediction. The only few talking points that I was going to go through was how the lads got on international duty. Obviously, there's still some games to come tonight, tomorrow, even some on Wednesday, as we kind of mentioned. But Pulisic scored a penalty.
No, did he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, in the 90th.
Penalty?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know he was your penalty taker.
Yeah.
Or is it because he was off? No, right, that's good. Who were you playing? Uzbekistan, was it?
Yeah.
Don't count. Tomorrow
hard, didn't play. Hard opponent. And actually, we actually looked like shit for the majority of the game.
1-3-0, was it?
I didn't watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, we scored two goals in the 90th and 91st minute, but it's Berhalter ball.
Yeah, get Greg out of there. But anyways, actually, this might be the Semper USA podcast, to be honest, with all of our new listeners.
Definitely during the
shout out to all you guys. Play. Appreciate it.
Musa, did he play in
that? He played the full 90, I think, didn't he?
Good. That's good for rhythm, because I think we're going to need him, to be honest, in the games to come, because it's a bit of a, I don't know what the word would be, but it's a pretty rough stretch of games that we've got coming up, because we've got the
Lazio next with Champions League in between.
The Derby, then we've got Newcastle on Tuesday, the 19th of September. Then we've got Verona, then we've got Cagliari. So those two games are perhaps a tad more affordable, but the Cagliari game is in midweek, so it's not like we get a rest there. And then we've got Lazio on the 30th of September. Then we've got Dortmund, and then we've got Genoa. So like, you know, there's barring that Verona Cagliari doubleheader, it's no respite, and you need all your players at that point. And I just hope that the injury bug, like, that's all it leaves us with is a couple of niggles here and there. Because if we start seeing players drop with muscle problems at this stage, you're missing like five or six games if you're 3 weeks out. So let's hope we don't get plagued by the same problems as last season. What else have we got? We got Teo. And Maignan started for France in their win over Ireland. Giroud obviously came off early. It sounds like Teo will not be played tonight against Germany because it's just a friendly. And obviously Giroud returned early, which is good. Maignan is expected to play. And then what have we got? Tomori didn't play. I went to go watch England against Ukraine in Wrocław in Poland. Was hoping to see Tomori play, but Southgate doesn't like him. He called him up, but only out of necessity, and he didn't start. But maybe he'll get a game against Scotland, who we play tomorrow night. We'll see about that. Okafor played a bit for Switzerland. Reinders made his Netherlands debut, which was a good, you know, that's a good step forward for him. That's about it.
The US play Oman tomorrow. Or Amin? Oman?
Oman.
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 Yeah.
Rather. I don't know where they are. In the Middle East?
Yeah, of course.
Why are you playing them, by the way? Why are you
spending
time in Oman? Like,
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, they're just friendlies, right? Madison, do you know if they're friendlies?
Yeah.
They're not.
Nations League or World Cup qualifying.
Oh, that's why I was like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's like a... Because don't they... I know Saudi Arabia gets into whatever fucking CONCACAF tournament we do, and... So maybe it was them as well, or not. Are we CONCACAF or CONMEBOL? This is how little I pay attention to international ball.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
It's just
CONCACAF or CONMEBOL. Which one are we? I don't...
You know the answer to that.
CONCACAF, right?
But I'm asking, so I don't...
You do.
I don't pay attention to international. I don't give a fuck about it.
AJ the World doesn't Cup, pay that's attention it. Until, like, it's like, USA is the final, let's go.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a true American. I'm gonna shit until the end.
What the fuck?
Until you raise the trophy of the draw against England at every major time.
Exactly.
Let's move on and do some questions then to round this one off. Obviously, with the break and stuff, there's not so much game matter to talk about. But next week we'll have reviews and previews coming out of our asses. So bear that in mind. Rohit Rajiv asks, would you play Pellegrino or Kier in the derby? We kind of touched on it, but I've got a controversial take, so.
You're going to say Pellegrino?
Yeah, I am, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm not. I'm not. Yeah. I understand his profile fits, but this dude has not done anything yet. A derby debut? Oof. Not even just a debut in Serie A, but a debut in a top five league? Like, that's risky. That's
who else made that debut in the derby?
Debut in a derby?
I don't know. Who going to say? Some fucking
his
great
brother
name.
Did.
Tomori debuted in a derby.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Donnarumma's brother.
Yes.
Antonio Donnarumma did. Yeah, and he won it.
What a guy. Oh, what icon. A guy. Yeah, I don't know. I'd throw him in there. He's been there throughout the entirety of the international break, which I think certainly helps. It's just, what are we hoping for if we play Kier? Because Thuram and Lautaro are faster, smarter, more physical. It will not end well. If we start with Kier, we are essentially playing with one centre-back. And I know that people will point to Kier's good couple of performances in the Champions League knockouts, particularly against Napoli. But
Spurs.
Yeah, but Tomori is not there. Like, he will have Thiaw next to him, who, okay, admittedly, he is athletic, but it's just not the same. There will be zero recovery pace if we play such a high line as we have done, and I don't think we know any other way at this point either. We're not a team who's going to sit very deep and keep men behind the ball and stuff. And we're going to get exposed in transition repeatedly. It just isn't going to end well. It's just not. We really need to hope Kalulu is okay. And I didn't think I'd say that because I think Kalulu's performances this calendar year in particular have left a lot to be desired. Like, he switched off a lot. Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm not looking forward to this. I think tomorrow's suspension now looks worse and worse with what we've seen, definitely. But it just makes me realise how much more confident I felt with it going into the game with Kalulu Thiaw, and we now might not have that. So we're having to either give a debut to a young kid who we've just signed from Argentina, or we're going to willingly and knowingly play a guy we know is not up to this level of game anymore. Like, that's pretty scary.
But I think Joey's going to go with
Mexes out there.
Hey, at least Mexes buys you a wonder goal every 10 games.
Oh, yeah. Or grabbing someone by the throat. I do miss that, man.
Yeah, that was worth the goal in itself.
Marco Vilela. Sorry. Which derby have you watched? Oh, sorry. Which derby that you've watched was your favorite?
Oh, I was like, all of them?
Oh, in Maddie's case, half of them.
This is like my favorite game of the year. It's the ones I make sure I watch.
This might be a little controversial, but I'm going to go with the opener from last season. It was a 3-2 victory. Mm. Watch it with Milan Club DC. We were at a rooftop bar. Badair was with me, and we were losing our fucking minds. Remember, at one point, we were up 3-1. And Badair and I specifically were talking so much shit because the Inter Club was there, too. We were talking so much shit to everyone. The table behind us was all Milan people, and they said, guys, there's still plenty of time left. Calm down. Almost perfectly on cue, 3-2. And then Badair and I are like, all right, calm down. We're good. Yeah. We're good. Like, relax. And then we won it, and the shit-talking just ensued, and I had my girlfriend actually drive me home. I was shit-faced. I was in rare form, so I was like, hey, I need a ride. And, we had a good time. So that's my favorite, and it has little to do with the game. I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, probably me? The 2-0 loss. No. Go on, Maddie. What's your favorite?
In 2016, when we beat them 3-0, that and Bakke scored.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to say. He was there for that.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
That is, like, our last, like, big victory over them. And it was just, like, they had our number for so long before that, and I just feel like that was like a we're back moment, even though we weren't back whatsoever. But it just felt so good.
It was like, well, finally Mihailovic has done the 4-4-2, which we were all crying out for. And it like, that game could have gone completely different because Icardi missed a penalty, as in, like, literally hit the post.
Hit the post, and then, yeah.
And then
Niang ran it back and scored, right? Or did it go out? And
then it wasn't long after that the second goal went in, basically. We were top row of the curve of Sud for that one. That was probably up there among the loudest that I've ever heard the stadium. So to be at, that was definitely the one. to be elsewhere watching it at Milan Club London when we came from behind to win 2-1 in the Scudetto season, the Giroud double. That was absolutely incredible. Had all family down as well because they were coming down for the weekend anyway. It's like, well, it clashes with the derby. We're going to have to go watch it somewhere. So I've dragged all of them, my parents, girlfriend's parents, to Milan Club London, and I think they were in total shock.
Surprised they let you guys in with all those people.
Well, yeah. and yeah, and then we went after. I went out afterwards, and that was just such a good day in general, and got us back into the title race, of course, and swung the momentum in our favour. So I would say that one. Then obviously, in general, favourite in folklore would be the 6-0 because, you know, 6-0. I don't think that'll ever happen again. And the stories about their fan running on, and
it's going to happen on Saturday.
Well, if it does, then it won't be for us. Hassan Abu Jerry asks, asks, with Lucas Hernandez commenting on playing with his brother and Manian's You Never Know comment on moving to PSG, I am worried about our club selling 1 to 2 stars a year unless we start paying salaries like elite clubs do. Thoughts?
I agree. Yeah. I don't think anyone's going to be going to PSG because they're on the downward trajectory. Also, I know I said this in the chat when Tonali left, but I was like, I think every summer we see a star leave to like rebuild a little bit. I don't know if that's gonna be the case. I think that Jerry kind of showed that like he wants to build a team, and you can't do that by letting your stars leave every summer. But I can understand why people would be worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, those are interesting comments. And if the reports are true that Maignan's demanding between 8 and 10 million euros a season, like that makes him our highest paid player. And you just don't do that with the goalkeeper, even if he might be our most vital. You know, he's obviously worth it, but we don't pay that. And he knows that. Everyone else knows that. So that's probably some bullshit article, to be honest. But I think we ultimately get Maignan renewed. And I don't think Teo wants to play with his brother. I know Lucas said it, but I don't know if Teo's all about that. I thought they had beef for some reason. Maybe they've squashed it. What, the brothers? It. Yeah.
No, they're fine. But, like, they compete for the same spot, in theory. So I don't really get that. Like, Lucas has been playing left back at PSG, but he also can't stay fit. So there is that as well. Look, I mean, what was he supposed to say to that question? No, I don't want to play with him. Yeah, you know what I mean, like, exactly. How was he supposed to respond to that? I'm not at all worried by that. Look, Teo is probably going to move on one day. Probably. He doesn't have any allegiance, like special connection to us other than where the club that gave him his big break. He grew up in Spain. He considers himself French. So, you know, could he return to Real Madrid one day? Might PSG come knocking with a massive bid and he does fancy going there? You cross that bridge when you come to it. He is one of the elite left backs in the world, definitely. I think there will come a time when, even though he only renewed last year, like if the salaries start moving towards that Liao level, the 6 mil rather than the 4 mil, I think we're going to have to readjust some salaries. The wage bill has remained pretty steady from last season to this season. So I do think there is a little bit of room for expansion in the future, but like player trading nowadays, not just for us and not just for Italian teams, it's not becoming something that you have to do. You just do it. Like the loyalty is so far gone now. You know, you've got sort of Dembele uprooting and going from Barcelona to PSG. PSG also signed Randall Kolo Muani, but then you've got Pavard forcing his way out of Bayern Munich to go to Inter, which is probably a worse project when they've got to sell players every year. Like it just happens. Players want to move. They want the commissions from moves and they want to try new experiences. Like when the day comes with Liao, which it will do. We just have to be prepared. Like this summer, as we've mentioned in previous episodes, when we sold Tonali, it was painful, but I did get the impression that we knew exactly what we were going to do with that money if we did sell a big player, because we then brought in 5 players in the next 5 weeks and all of a sudden the squad looked a lot better for it. And then we put the finishing touches on in August.
And Liao's price will be double Tonali. So then the players we're bringing in, you know, obviously it's not the exact same thing, but they might be double of what we replaced the Tonali players with. We might be getting five players at 40 mil, you know, as opposed to five at 20 mil. So it can improve the squad over time. Obviously, you never want to lose your superstars, but like that's just the business nowadays, you know. And if you see guys like Kulumani going for 90 million and you see what Saudi Arabia is paying for all these, you know, average players, look, a release cost of 150 million is no longer untouchable. That is simple for a lot of these big clubs that spend big. So I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, how many 100 mil plus signings did the Premier League make this summer? A lot. Like Moise Caicedo was like 110. You want me to believe that they would have paid
Chelsea
40 more for a guy like Liao, especially a team like Chelsea who needs it and has shown that they're willing to spend $10 billion to, you know, to dig themselves out of this hole they put themselves in. So I wouldn't be surprised if Liao's gone next summer. And I don't know if it's necessarily because he wants to go, but you know, if the offer comes in and we accept it, I think we'd be like, hey, we do need to make this money back.
Yeah. And that's the bottom line, right? It's like, after seeing Tonali leave earlier this summer, club record sale, it makes you realise that there is no line of loyalty. Like, oh, we'll never lose someone who's a boyhood fan of the club. The moment that that happened, you realise there's nobody that's untouchable in our team. Nobody. And we've also got to finance the signing of probably an elite striker next summer.
And this new stadium we're building.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about the stadium, but like, we have to finance a new striker, right? I'd sell Teo personally, but we can talk about that next summer.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be rumors about that. And the Maignan comments as well. I think people kind of misinterpreted them because I think it was a school that he used to play at, and he was asked questions by literal children like, you know, would you ever come back to PSG? Was he supposed to tell some kid, no, fuck PSG?
Mind you, but in
like,
Paris.
He had a PSG shirt, apparently. Yeah. Like, so I was just going to say, I'll never say never.
The kid did?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And he said, you know, never say never. I'm a Parisian, but I've got a contract with Milan, which I think was the best way that you could answer that question. I mean, I remember after the game against Spurs, the second leg against Spurs, he did an interview with a French TV station. I can't remember who it was, but basically someone asked him, what do you think about PSG being eliminated by Bayern Munich? It was beIN Sports. Mm-hmm. And he said, it doesn't matter to me at all. I'm at Milan. And then he started laughing and said, I don't know what else I can say. I came through the academy at Paris, but that's 9 years since I left. I'm focused on my current club. So when he got asked it by an actual reporter, he laughed and said, I don't care. Like, that's far in my past. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. I think, you know, there may well be a market for Maignan. I think 100 million or 80, 100 million range is really tough to reject for any goalkeeper because, in my opinion, they are probably the most replaceable players positionally. However, we know that Maignan adds value with his leadership and the other intangibles that he brings, which is why he would fetch close to another club record fee. But he is 27, will turn 28 this season. He has had some injury problems. Like, these are all things that the management will be thinking of if these big offers do come in. And it does make us interesting. Like, we're never static. I know Maddie has said before, like, he doesn't want us to become a Dortmund where we're just, you know, selling our best players all the time. I also don't think that making 10 signings and making a big sale every summer is sustainable either. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't completely overhaul the squad every summer. You'll never get any chemistry going. But hopefully we've taken that step forward with our squad depth now, which means next summer, no big sales, ideally, and we just fine-tune with a couple of signings here and there. Who knows, we might get, you know, the 30 mil for Dikita Lara and stuff that is a bit more sensible for us to raise money. Final question comes from Keviano. Will we ever get our own stadium? The talks seem to be taking forever. If we have our own stadium, will the magic of two very successful city rivals sharing one stadium lose its special feel when it's derby time? Might it make it more hostile? Because it's you're in our house now, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, think about Madrid. I guess, no. Madrid and Barca are not city rivals. I don't think anything's going to change with the Derby. You know, it's no. Just because we like, it's not special because we share a stadium. It's special because we're both, you know, successful Italian clubs from the same city.
Yeah.
One of them is semi-successful, but, and yes, I think things in Italy just take a little bit longer than elsewhere. So a stadium will come hopefully in our lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, you look at other derbies and you look at like Spurs and Arsenal, obviously not the same caliber as Milan Inter, but that still gets a big pop every year and they have their own stadiums. You know, you do see it, Madrid and Atletico, like, I don't know. I do think the Milan Derby is the most special. Maybe we're just biased because we're Milan fans, but I think it might become more hostile once we have our own stadium, like you were saying. I think that's probably where it goes, because the only reason we're going to build our own stadium is because Inter can't afford to do it. So now not only is like, look at us in our new home, but also look at you, the broke boy. You know, you couldn't afford to come play with us. So It's like, I don't know. It's interesting. It will be weird having Inter as like the sole proprietor of San Siro. But, you know, if the new stadium is, I don't know, we've had so many designs at this point. Like, I don't even know which one to pick on. But if it's one of the very cool ones, and there's been a lot of weird ones, you know, it'll be worth it in the long run, you know. And I'm not too concerned about, I guess, that aspect of it. I think it's going to build a better team and a better product. And I don't really care if it downplays or waters down Inter in any way. In fact, I almost prefer that. I would love this derby to be irrelevant and we just steamroll them every single year, you know, like, but there is a special magic to it that might go away. I don't know. I'm going back and forth here.
Like, how much of the derby can you say, as a percentage sort of ballpark figure, how much of the appeal of it is the fact that we share the same stadium? In my opinion, it's a pretty small percentage.
I don't even think about that as like an aspect of the movie.
Exactly. So if we have our own stadium in San Donato, let's say, as seems to be the front runner at the moment, what will happen? Well, it'll be our home game. We'll have 85% of the spectators there. And there'll be an away section. How is that any different to what happens now? You know, there's still a home team in the derby at San Siro. You know, there'll still be 75-80% Inter fans there on Saturday night. So, yeah, we share a stadium, but it's not 50-50 for any of the games. So it's more just like the romance of it, like two clubs that big that happen to play in the same place and therefore they all descend on this cathedral of football, which it is. Like the history of the place is incredible. But I think it is definitely more so the narrative of the fact that these are two clubs that are incredibly successful, hailing from the same city, the only city to have two Champions League winning sides, and you know, we've combined for 10 of them. Albeit we've got 7, don't forget that. And the derby will live on. It will live on and yeah, as said, I think it might even get a bit more hostile if we decide to take the plunge and say, we're leaving you behind. We want a brand new state-of-the-art home. And to anybody who is still sceptical about the idea of us leaving San Siro, first of all, just go to a game because it's a shit tip now. It's so old. It's coming up to 100 years old. Like, it opened in 1926. Yeah, it's been renovated in 1990, but the toilets are literally holes in the ground. Like, it is dreadful. It is so far behind modern stadiums. Also, we don't get much revenue from it because so much of it goes back to the council for rent. And also having our own stadium makes so much sense because of what would happen around it as well. You know, our headquarters would move there. We could potentially move the training ground somewhere nearby, but there'd be bars, hotel, restaurant, museum, club shop. Like, it would become a Milan village in that part of the city, and that would be our part of the city. And
but I think that's a part of the apprehension, is the Milan fans have their ownership of that surrounding area of San Siro, and that's going to all of a sudden become totally Inter territory. You know, the restaurant that the Corvo Sud meets at before games becomes an Inter restaurant, and all the stuff that Milan fans did there, they lose that. So I think there's a mental apprehension on that aspect. But yes, you do gain new territory in a different area, but losing the stuff that, if you know, if you're a local, you've lived that and you've gone to, and like, that's been your weekend hotspot for you know, 15, 20 years, however long, that does get a little iffy. And as we know with Italians, they don't like change a whole lot. So
that much is true. Yeah, definitely. It's all we've ever known. It's all they've ever known as the fans who've been going, you know, for decades to this same place week in, week out. And it's not as if San Siro is a thriving area aside from the stadium either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got 70,000 people descend once a week on this place. So it will be interesting to see what happens if Inter stay there and if it does become their, you know, their entire thing. They're apparently trying to build their own stadium in Rossano as well, but I don't think they've got the money to do it, to be honest. So if even they want to leave, I think it shows the situation we're at with San Siro. And yeah, like all change, especially change this big, it will take some time to get accustomed to. It will be weird not getting on the tram to San Siro anymore and instead going down to the south of the city. But we need the money. We need to take the step forward. You know, I live around the corner from Arsenal Stadium. They had the painful move emotionally of going from Highbury, which was this really cool old school stadium, to the Emirates. But we're now starting to see the revenues are rocketing, and they needed that to take the step forward. Otherwise, they'd have stagnated just up the road. Spurs, exactly the same. They've got, in my opinion, one of the best stadiums in the world now that they've built there. And it is needed, absolutely needed. But it's Italian bureaucracy, so it won't open until 2048 or something like that. That's it, then. Thank you to everybody who has tuned in for the entirety of the episode, and thanks to everybody who submitted questions. Thank you once again to everyone who subscribes to us on Substack. We're going to be back next week, of course, recapping this game and looking ahead to our first action in the Champions League. In the meantime, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter, at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yep, Tour 45. I'm sure I'll be here next week.
Get
on. Thank you for watching, everyone. We will catch you in a week.
Gol! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'ora all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti!